Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Secure Your Life, the show where you get real talk about real life, how to control and take control of your financial future. Securing your life means freedom for your future, understanding the importance of credit and what it means to your financial future. If you are indeed living a financial nightmare, and you want to learn how you can fix what is broken, then you have tuned in to the right show. I am your host, Diamond Taylor, and we have a great show for you tonight. Tonight's hot topic is about home ownership, as well as mortgage loan modification. And we have a great guest tonight. He's going to give you all kinds of great information. So if you are one that is looking to buy your first home or you're looking to buy another property if you're already in a home or if you're looking to get a little more understanding about loan modification, you've tuned into the best show on earth. So I would like to welcome all of you all. I'm going to give you the phone number so you can call in. So you can get your questions answered. If you have a comment you'd like to add, then we welcome that too. I'd like to let you know that the chat room is also open, and the phone number to call in will be 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343. I'm going to let my guests chime in right now, and he's going to give you some great, wonderful tips, especially if you are a first-time home buyer. I know this is definitely a buyer's market. So those of you all who are in the market for your new home, then this is definitely the show where you can get great information. I'd like to introduce my guest. Hello?
Yes, how are you doing tonight, Diamond?
I am fabulous, and I want to thank you for joining us. I know you're going to give us some really hot tips on those of us who would like to purchase our first home.
Yes, it's definitely a honor and a pleasure to come here tonight. My name is Thomas Nelson. I've been in the mortgage industry for over a decade now, so I've seen several cycles. I've done everything from originate, help process. I've managed a sales force and operations for a large mortgage company. So I've seen a whole lot, and hopefully people can get some insight as to what the present state of the mortgage industry is right now and make sure people really understand what they're getting into when they get a mortgage and how to get a mortgage, and then also hopefully talk a little bit about foreclosure prevention through modifications. So first and foremost, what is a mortgage? You know, for those people who don't know what a mortgage is, basically a mortgage, you give a mortgage to a bank or a mortgage company, meaning that you secure your house with this debt instrument known as a mortgage, and you basically agree to pay under the terms of a note, which a note is basically a bond, a contract that says that you will pay, and upon paying for that home for a certain period of time, once you've made the last payment, you actually get the home free and clear of all encumbrances and therefore become the sole owner of the home. Now, technically when you buy a house, the mortgage company is kind of in a somewhat of a partnership with you, so to speak, but you actually, on public record, are known as the owner. Now, for those who have never bought a house before, thought that you could own a home, there are plenty of opportunities out there for you to buy a home. There's a lot of media hype telling you that it's, so difficult to buy a home and that it's, just very, very arduous. And yeah, it is a little bit more documentation involved. What they're basically talking about is the fact that now when you go to get a loan, your documents that you normally should have had in the first place are required. So there's no more, fast and easy loans where, your credit score is your basically your ticket to buy the house. If you don't have, if you're self-employed and you don't show all your income on your tax returns, then sorry, there's no loans out there for you at this point. Pretty much you're going to have to be able to show your income on W-2s, pay stubs, or you gain pension or retirement, or if you're self-employed, you're going to have to, show income. And now it requires, in most cases, some money. Now, for first-time home buyers, they actually have programs still available where you can get, either your down payment subsidized or you can get 100% financing. So let's talk about the different loan types that are out there. You basically, at this point in time in the mortgage industry, have your conventional loans, which basically are going to be the loans that, A, are not insured by the government, like a FHA loan or a VA loan or rural housing, anything that's not, quote-unquote, insured by the government. So that means a loan that is either held by a bank on their own books or a loan through Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, which you probably have heard those names because of the bailouts. And technically, they have been taken over by the government, but at one point, they were private, semi-private, public organizations. Now, with that being said, you can go to a bank and you can request for loan financing, but in order to do so, you must have credit. Okay. Now, what does that mean? Right? What is considered good credit? In this market, good credit is really 700 and above.
Wow.
700 and above is good credit. 740 is excellent credit. At one point, not so many years ago, 620 was considered good to fair credit, or 660. And, excellent credit would be 700. Now, good credit is 700 is just okay. And 740 is really what they want to see typically. Now, with that being the case, when you go to buy a home now, you know, all your funds that you need for down payment, which is basically, say, for instance, you're looking at a home for $100,000, and, you know, most loans now, the best loans are going to come with, you know, a 20% down payment. All
okay.
the funds either need to be your funds that you can be sourced, coming from a bank account, coming from an IRA, coming from a 401k. It could be from gift funds from a relative or gift funds from a philanthropic organization like a, you know, like, for instance, the United Way has, you know, money that they make available for people. So you, everything has to be documented. This is the age of full disclosure on everything. Okay. Now, when you go to the bank, you know, it's in your best interest to be educated about where you stand with your credit. And I know that Diamond does a series on credit and your credit profile. Okay. Now, if you go to the bank and you talk to someone and they tell you that they cannot provide you a loan or they say that you're not ready to buy a home, please don't take that as someone trying to discourage you from buying a home. You need to get educated. And I suggest before you go talk to someone about buying, get educated yourself about what your credit is and how it should look. Okay. Now, for those who have never looked at your credit report before, your credit score is basically a composite of what is actually going on in your credit history. Now, credit scores can vary. They can go anywhere from, you know, technically, you know, they say 300 to 850, but, you know, if you have a 300, you know, that means that you got your issues. But in any event, when you go to talk to someone at a bank, you can go and actually obtain your credit scores ahead of time. Now, the way to do that, there is a cost involved. But you can go to a website called MyFICO.com.
Okay.
Now, MyFICO.com is basically where credit scores will be housed at. And these are the same credit scores that you will get when you go to a lender. It's the same scoring model and methodology that they use to come up with at the lenders. So sometimes people, what they know is they might go to a bank or they might go to a credit union and they get their credit score for something else, and it's different than what the mortgage company says. It's because the scoring methodology is different for different types of credit. Because a mortgage is such a big piece of credit, they tend to have different things that they modify in the credit score matrix that may be differing from what a car loan or what insurance. Insurance, they have insurance scores, so different types of credit have a slightly different model. But in any event, when you go to MyFICO, these are the people who created your credit scores. It's a company called Fair Isaac & Company. So when you go to that website, you'll see Susie Orman's face on there, as a matter of fact. You'll see her on there, and you know, basically it'll tell you about, you know, getting your FICO score, not the FICO score, which is, she's actually accurate on one of those things. I really don't agree with some of the things she says, but she actually is accurate when she talks about the FICO score. That is what they are looking at, okay? And they use what's called a median credit score. Median meaning in between the high and the low. So, for instance, if you have a 700, a 720, and a 740, credit score from the three credit bureaus, which are TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian, the 720 is what they're going to look at. That is your median credit score. Okay. Now,
okay.
If, say, for instance, you got two credit scores that are the same, so let's say you had a 700, a 740, and a 740, your credit score would be a 740, right? If you had two credit scores that were 700, 700, 700, 740, guess what? Your median credit score is going to be a 700. Okay, so that's the way that works. Now, as you understand that, when you go to obtain your own credit, the benefit there is it does not turn into what's known as an inquiry. Inquiries in themselves are not necessarily bad. It's just that when there is an abundance in a relatively short period of time, it gives the appearance that you're looking to obtain credit, which means that you potentially are at credit risk. But it will not get you declined on a loan. It won't stop you from getting a loan, but it will affect your credit score to a certain degree. Now, some people are extra fanatical about these things, but at the end of the day, if you have a really high credit score, if you got like a 750 or 760, 7 points is not going to hurt anything. That's because that's typically what a pull does. Whenever you talk to more than one lender within a 15-day period, because most people want to shop for a mortgage, you can do that, and there's actually no impact as far as if you talk to, say, Wells Fargo, Chase, and Citibank, and they look at your credit all within the 15-day period, there's actually no impact to you. But
really?
Like I said, yes. And in fact, certain companies have it when they pull credit on you, and if they pull it internally within 21 days, they use the same credit report. So to guard you against, you know, what the brokers would do in a lot of cases, they would shop your loans and then take you to 12 different lenders and pull your credit at each one and kill your credit. See, that's not good. You know, on like the same day or something like that. You know, so, but yeah, if you go shop with several different mortgage companies within a 15-day window, those don't count as separate inquiries, seen as the same, okay?
Okay.
So, let's talk about some of the misconceptions about credit scoring, okay? Some of the misconceptions are, A, that there's some racial element to it, okay? The basis of that premise is that, you know, in certain pockets, people of color sometimes may have lower credit scores. There is a legitimate reason behind why that is. The reason why you'll see that, if you go to towns in the South or any place you have large populations of typically African-American people, they have high percentages of finance companies. Finance companies are the worst kind of credit because it means that you are a high risk because you went to the lender of last resort, which is a finance company. So when it goes on your credit, it shows that. Now, even if you pay on time, it'll even be an entry on your credit report that says one of the reasons your score isn't high is because you obtained credit from a finance company. So the words of the wise.
What is an example of
like
a finance
going to,
company?
A finance company typically are companies that have higher interest rates that based on, say, the state's usury laws will basically go to the ceiling or the max. So, for instance, that would be your Blazer Finance, that would be your, which is owned by, was Washington Mutual, which is now part of Chase, which I think they try to spin those off. Then there's City Financial, there's Wells Fargo Financial. So those are all examples of finance companies. Household, which is now HSBC. Which household went to got shut down.
Okay.
That's where you find a lot of subprime loans. Like subprime loans pretty much don't exist anymore, but they still exist in the form of finance companies because they'll still offer people rates that are higher than whatever a normal bank is charging people. All right. So once again, people's credit scores are affected by things like, you know, where to get credit. Huge. So if you go to a credit union or a bank, that's where you want to get your credit from. Always deal with a credit union bank, period. Those are the top tier places to get credit from. Okay. Now, on your credit report, you know, you have different sections of your credit report. You have, you know, your, depending upon who issues the credit report, because, you know, there's different companies that actually act as vendors on behalf of the three credit bureaus. And they basically have sections in regards to public records, which includes, you know, judgments, bankruptcies, lease pendants, which is a civil action in the case of, you know, a debt that needs to be satisfied, in the case of a mortgage that's gone bad, collect, you know, any type of civil action that may appear, that could be also child support. All types of things can show up in the public record section of the credit report. Tax liens. So those types of items, those will be very problematic for a loan. If you have a tax lien, in some instances, it's very rare that they do it now, but at some time the IRS would, say, for instance, do some type of agreement to let them still do the loan as long as they had a payment arrangement. And sometimes the lender go for it. But in this environment, a lot of them don't want to do that anymore. But
okay.
those items on the section of the credit report, if you should see something like that when you get your credit report, it needs to be dealt with, because what you don't want to do is walk into a lender's office with a file that's riddled with holes, meaning that you don't want to go in with a situation that is difficult. Some people think it's the lender's job to take care of their problem, and that's the wrong attitude, because what that means is they're going to charge you higher interest. Even if you will never plan on defaulting on a property because you're going to take care of your home and pay your mortgage, the credit score is what they use to offer you certain rates. So, say, for instance, someone with a 680 credit score and someone with a 740 credit score, sometimes it could be as much as a point difference in the interest rate.
Really?
Yes. Depending on the term of the loan, on a 30-year fixed loan, it could be almost a point difference in some cases, depending on the product. Okay? So it's very, very important when you start talking about conventional loans. And it differs from bank to bank also. Right? So now, that's the first C. When you talk about mortgage, you talk about credit. Okay? Now, let's talk a little bit about capacity. Okay?
Okay.
Capacity, meaning your ability to pay. So what they want to see is stability. So you have to think of it this way. If someone was saying, I'm going to lend you hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy a piece of property, would you want to lend to someone who doesn't have a good track record of employment? Or would you rather have someone who's been on the job for 3-4 years that they've, you know, managed to, you know, stay on their job and some size to, you know, stability? That's what they're looking for these days. They want more stable employment. At one point, you used to actually be able to get loans when you worked for a temp agency. Now that's more difficult to do. Now, some lenders will still do it as long as the person's been an active temp for like 2 years and they got, you know, secured contracts. But, you know, now it's a lot more difficult to get that done. You know, very rare that people are being able to get a house with temp agency employment, okay? So very important that, you know, you be able to demonstrate the ability to repay the loan. The assumption that's made on most loans, and this is just kind of like one of those standard practices and guidelines that are kind of within underwriting of a loan, and the underwriting meaning that it's the process of verification and validation of facts as it pertains to someone maintaining a loan over the life of the loan. So that whole methodology is based on, okay, if you have a job, you're going to be in that job for 3 years, and by you being on it already for 2 years at the minimum or in that field for 2 years, there's a strong likelihood based on your expertise and skills that you'll maintain that employment, therefore being able to pay your mortgage, okay?
Okay.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about capital, right? Third C, okay? Capital meaning your assets. Do you have savings? Do you have stocks? Do you have bonds? Do you have some form of financial backing, an emergency fund, if you will, in case the worst happens? Because what they don't want to see is your one paycheck away from being kicked out of a home, right?
And so, that's a lot of people today.
Exactly. And so they usually, on most loans now, conventional loans, that is, they'll require that you have what's called reserves, okay? The standard for the industry is 2 months reserves, and 2 months reserves basically accounts for 2 months of mortgage payments, including principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, and in some cases, homeowners association fees and dues. Okay, now that can be in an IRA, it can be in a 401k, it can be inside of a savings money market, it can be inside of a whole life insurance policy. That actually can be used as a very little known fact. If you have a cash value life insurance policy, that can actually be used as reserves. I've actually gotten some loans. Yes, yes. because it has cash value. And because it's your asset, you can borrow against it and it's not seen as a debt. Okay. So very, very important that you have capital, okay, because they want to see that you're financially and fiscally responsible. Okay.
Okay.
Now, character, you know, this comes more so in other types of loans that are alternatives, and I'll talk a little bit about that a little bit later on. Basically, is this person a forthright person? You know, like, for instance, if they ask the mortgage company, you know, ask you a question on your application and you give them an answer that is not satisfactory, you know, they can deny your loan. Like, don't please believe that you cannot hide something from these people. I mean, let me give you an idea of the type of technology they have right now. Right now in the mortgage industry, they can see, like, if someone says that they are a self-employed person, they can go to the Secretary of State if you claim a corporation. They can go to, online to the county and find out if you have a business license. So if you submit something that's not accurate, it can be validated instantly.
Really?
They do 45. Yes, they do. Underwriting has a website called LexisNexis that pretty much can tell them anything they want to know. They use different companies, Kroll, Factual Data, LexisNexis, Dun & Bradstreet, you name it, they use it. They go to the county websites. They got a website called NetTronline. I mean, I can go on and on. So there's nothing that you're going to be able to do to get one over on these mortgage companies. And if you do, the note can be called, meaning that if you try to do anything that's not right, they can actually call the note and force you to pay. And if you can't pay, then they're going to foreclose on you. So it is in your best interest to be very upfront and be very accurate. And it's all about intent. So some people tend to get overly caught up in facts and, as far as, like, you know, say for instance, you know, you put down an application, you make about $3,200 a month, and they verify your income, and it comes in at $3,150. No one's going to grill you for that. If it comes in at, even if it comes in $200 short, you might be including overtime. That's part of their job. They know that people sometimes overestimate their income. Your intent wasn't to defraud anyone, because if you gave them W-2s and a pay stub, obviously you're not looking to hop anything, right?
Right.
Now, if they notice that, you know, your pay stubs don't match from your W-2s, because, say, for instance, you have a pay stub that's ADP format, which ADP is a payroll company, and you give them an ADP W-2 and a Paychex pay stub, you're going to have a problem. So,
a,
you know,
big,
you just
problem.
Need to be, yeah, so, you know, you just need to be upfront about everything that you tell them. You know, don't hide. And as far as voluntary information, you just need to just tell them what it is, you know, what your situation is, okay? The person who is, you know, typically going to be the first line on the mortgage front is going to be the loan officer. So, you know, that person is the buffer. So you need to let them know what the situation is, so that way, based on their knowledge of the product, they sometimes can come up with remedies. You know, things that you think are problems aren't necessarily always problems, okay? Right?
Okay.
And then last thing, collateral, okay, very important. Collateral being the house. Now, depending upon the housing market that you're in, you know, there are certain housing options that are more prevalent. Say, for instance, in Chicago, New York, D.C., Detroit, Jersey, Massachusetts, you have a lot of co-ops, right? Now, there are certain places where there are co-ops that, you know, you can't even get a loan from half the time. Like in Florida, they're co-ops, but no one wants to lend there because of the issues with them. They're not as prevalent. So, therefore, certain cities and certain states, you can get lending for co-ops, and some you just can't, okay? You have condos, right? Condominiums are very tough. Co-ops and condos are very tough. You know, co-op, for instance, is considered a cooperative share. You technically don't own the unit. You have shares in the company that actually owns the units inside the building. So it's a different, it's a very funny kind of home ownership. But nonetheless, it's out there. If you get a condo, condos basically, they function in a way where you may have a management company or a homeowner association in which you basically have a responsibility to a homeowner association, which you pay fees to. They take care of like common areas, grounds and stuff like that. And those are difficult to get financed in this market. In fact, you know, if you don't have 20% down, you may not be able to get into a condo unless it's already approved through a government program like FHA or through VA or something like that, okay?
Really?
Yes, yes.
So if you are trying to get a condo, it could be difficult because you don't actually own the physical building.
Not only that, it's the condos are harder to sell in the case of the default. Everything that the mortgage guidelines are based off of is based off of you defaulting on your loan, period. That's what it's all based on. So they look at it, the glass half full or half empty, I should say.
Okay.
If you should actually default on that loan, they want to know that they have a way to recapitalized by selling the property. So a condo in a down market is hard to get rid of. And so what happens is, you know, if you don't have 20% down, the mortgage insurance companies do not want to insure it.
Gotcha. Okay.
So now it's very difficult to get a condominium. Okay. Townhomes basically get the same treatment as a single-family residence that is attached, meaning that it's freestanding and it's off on its own, and you have all the rights and privileges as a homeowner without any restrictions other than any covenants that are, like, if you're in a subdivision. But townhomes, pretty much you don't really have too many problems unless you're in the state of Florida, California, Nevada, or Arizona. Those are the top states for foreclosures, so any attached dwelling is going to have problems in those four states typically. Okay? Once again, because of the foreclosure issues, so there's typically, in some cases, looking at 20% down, unless you look at, once again, an FHA table. Okay? All right, and then you have, besides that, you have your regular stick-built homes, single-family homes. You don't find too many people buying manufactured homes anymore, which is a good thing.
Right.
Manufactured homes, pretty much stay away from them. They depreciate just like a car does, not being elitist, that's just the fact. They just, because they're made of inferior quality products typically, you don't want to deal with them. There's other options to manufacture homes, like modulars, which I don't want to get too far into that, but they basically are built to a different set of codes and guidelines and therefore get the same type of treatment the house will. All right, so we kind of went down the line on all the things with credit and then collateral and all that stuff. So now let's talk a little bit about programs that are out there. So most people look at a loan for a 30-year period, which, you know, is based on people looking long-term and being able to afford this house, you know, on a monthly basis, which I can totally understand and appreciate that. When most people look to apply for a loan, you know, you typically see if it's a married couple or whatever the case may be, most people are looking to apply jointly. My advice is always try to make it where one person can qualify. If that means you not getting the home right away and you taking the opportunity to pay off debt so the person can qualify on their own, make that your focus. Because you always want to have a backup plan in case the worst happens, okay? Now, with that being said, okay, let's talk a little bit about the programs. So your standard 30-year fixed loan, right? Right now, those loans are going on average at around 4.375%, 4.5%, which are really, really low. And in terms of history, that's about the lowest it's been. At one point, you were able to get a 30-year fix. Sometime, and you can actually, in some cases, get your loan below 4% if you're willing to pay for it. And we'll talk a little bit about that. You have a conventional 30-year fix. If you are in a certain market, say, for instance, if you're in a state like Texas, Texas has had the least issues because the government in Texas has done certain things to safeguard its population against, you know, subprime lending and things like that. So you can still, in Texas, for instance, on a conventional loan, get a loan which is 5% down. Now, if you go to, like, anywhere in the Northeast, anywhere from Philly and above, you got to put 10% down at a minimum. Okay, and we're talking about a regular state-built house at this point. Okay, so with that being the case, you know, if you're going to do that, it's going to require that you pay some type of private mortgage insurance. Now, private mortgage insurance basically has no benefit for you. It really is to protect the lender in case you default. And it's an actual insurance policy that a third party will pay a claim out on. Okay? So, you know, a lot of people say, well, why would I do that? Well, it's either you do it or you don't get a loan. Okay? So it's pretty much how that works. Now, if you don't have, you know, money for a large down payment, okay, there are a couple of options besides just a regular standard run-of-the-mill 30-year fixed, you know, conventional loan. You have FHA, which is, you know, through the federal government, under HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, Federal Housing Administration is a great program. They made some changes here recently because of the credit quality. It didn't have a credit score restriction up until recently. Now they want people to have a minimum of like a 620. Most of the banks have adopted that. And that's on a purchase, okay? So, you know, at one point, you know, you could get an FHA loan, you could have a 500 credit score. And if you had a down payment that was greater than the minimum of 3.5%, that would open up a lot of doors. Because if you put down 20% FHA, the way they looked at, okay, you know what, this person is committed to getting into this house, so we're going to let them get the loan even if they got a 500. You know, there used to be a lot of flexibility, but now they are really clamping down. Just because of all of the foreclosures. FHA at one point, you ready for this?
I'm
even
ready.
Though the rates were fixed, had a 25% default rate.
Really? Why?
Because the credit quality. I mean, people were getting loans and they didn't really have money. They were getting loans through like down payment assistance that was kind of fraudulent through like Nehemiah and some of these other programs, Ameridream, where it was seller-funded. The way they would do it, they would jack up the sales price. They would give basically what they call a grant, and there was a fee that was extracted out of the money that came. And so you have to jack up the sales price to get the down payment. So what happened is the money would come from the seller going back to the 501c3 not-for-profit. And basically the federal government said no more of that. So they basically shut them down. So now,
and
you know,
rightfully so.
Yeah, because, you know, because basically it was something called price fixing, that when you go in and you negotiate your contract, but then in order for you to get the concessions, you were going back and getting the price increased. It happens all the time, but it would be done so bad to the point where people would end up jacking up the sales price an extra $15,000-$20,000 to try to make the deal work, okay? So the federal government said, no more of that. So they got rid of that practice. So now, on FHA loans, for instance, like I said, 3.5% down is what's required for a purchase with a 620 credit score. You typically have to show W-2s, pay stubs. You know, if you're a regular job, you know, maybe some bank statements. You know, if you have pretty fair to decent credit to begin with. Not too hard necessarily a process, but what it is, it is a little bit more detailed just because what people don't realize is that when the FHA loan is being underwritten, right, by the underwriter, that underwriter is actually held accountable for the results of defaults on those loans. So don't take it personally, but basically every time they do a loan, their job is on the line. So you do the same thing. For instance, if they got the statistics in the area show that 5% of the loans go into default, and this underwriter underwrites loans in the same area, and 10% of her loans go into default, or his loans go into default, it's a problem. So what happens is they lose their underwriting authority, and it decreases their income potential, and also gives them a black mark in the industry because it shows they have bad judgment. So that's what a lot of that stuff has to do with, okay? All the nitpicking and everything like that. So with that being the case, on an FHA loan, what happens is they send you a loan through a system called CAVRS, which is it's a voice interactive response system. Basically, what CAVRS does is that it looks into your history with the federal government, and it sees if you have student loans, any defaulted taxes, any cases, bankruptcies that may not be showing on credit. It goes in and finds out everything it can, and it's very much done instantly with your social security number, date of birth, a couple other things. And if it comes back with something like, say, for instance, student loans, remember back in the day when people were like, I ain't paying no student loans. Well, guess what? You get no house now. Because now you can't even get a conventional loan with a default student loan now. That's right. Because now Fannie Mae has been taken over 80% by the federal government. So now you can't even get a conventional loan with student loans being into default. So in default meaning that you basically haven't made payments in 6 months and they're basically, you know, wanting you to pay up or else. So, yeah, if you got a bad student loan or you got tax liens or something like that, FHA is not going to happen for you. So very important that, you know, if you have that situation that you resolve it, okay? So now, with FHA, something that's very important. FHA looks at collateral very closely. So what that means is that, you know, trying to get a fixer-upper through FHA, at one point in time, you know, that was happening a whole lot. They had a program through FHA called 203K meant for that in certain areas, especially in the Northeast where you have a lot of older homes and multifamily homes. They'll use funds available from the loan proceeds to rehab the house, okay? Most smart originators, when they would do these loans, they would automatically put you in a 203K. And this is a very smart thing to do. Reason being because, let's say, for instance, this is the house you really love, but there's issues with the house that crop up that the seller says, you know what, I've negotiated this price down $20,000, I'm not doing it. So normally that deal would be dead, right?
Right.
If you got a 203K loan, it's not dead as long as your debt ratio can handle the additional debt that you're going to take out for taking a $5,000 to $10,000 advance from proceeds to cover the repairs. So, for some of the bigger banks, they are getting away from because it's kind of complicated. They have to have a construction loan department. And a lot of the banks have gotten away from construction lending. I think Wells Fargo is one of the ones that still is doing construction lending. But in any event, yeah, so a 203K is preferably the way you want to set your loan up from the get-go. So that way, if there does become an issue with the house and the seller doesn't want to deal with it, if you really want the house, there's still a way for you to get the house. Okay. Now, FHA is a little bit more flexible on credit in terms of your interest rate is not nearly as affected by credit score. So if someone with a 620 and someone with a, say, 720, you're not going to see a difference of 1 point in rate. You're going to see more like maybe the pricing is a little bit better from the standpoint of, let's say, for instance, you know, someone with a 720 can get 4.5% with 0 points. That same person with 620 might get 4.5% with like a half a point. Okay, meaning like you will pay, end up paying something to get that rate, and points basically are a form of prepaid interest. So they usually account for 1% of the loan amount being borrowed. So if it's a half a point on, say, $200,000 purchase, that's equal to $1,000. Okay, so we'll get a little bit more into that. So FHA loans, rate for first-time home buyers. Requirements for down payments, 3.5%. And if you're in a high dollar area where, for instance, homes are more expensive, don't worry if you're in New York, New Jersey, places like that, you can buy a home through FHA up to $729,000, believe it or not, with 3.5% down. Now,
wow.
Unless you're really balling like that, you don't really want to do that because that's going to be kind of expensive. But one of the things that's a little different with FHA is that they have mortgage insurance on their loans on 30 years, no matter how much money you put down. So if you have a large down payment, you know, and you have the credit score, you know, obviously you're not going to go FHA, you're going to go conventional. But they make you pay mortgage insurance for 5 years at a minimum, and then they charge you 1% of the loan amount up front that you can even pay up at the closing or wrap it into your loan. And with that being said, your mortgage insurance premium, say on a $200,000 purchase, is probably about $170 a month on FHA. Okay? So it's an extra expense, but it's necessary and it's required. So just know that you'll pay that mortgage insurance for a minimum of 5 years, and then you have to have at least 22% equity in the house. Okay? It's different than conventional. Conventional only requires 20% equity. FHA requires 22%. I guess the burden of proof is higher that the risk is lower. All right, so now, let's say, for instance, you want to buy a home, you want to get FHA, but you may not have all the money. Guess what? No worries. You actually can get some free money. Okay, now where's the free money at? Most of the free money is out there, and people just don't know where to look for it. Okay. So, for instance, if you go to any state housing department, usually there's money that's sent from the federal government that trickles down. And this is the time of year where their pockets are full because it's a new fiscal year. Okay.
Right.
So, with that being the case, you can go to typically, like in Chicago, you can get anywhere from $10,000 to $40,000 for down payment assistance, okay, from the city. With that being said, it is incumbent upon you to find out about how these resources work and how they're disseminated, okay? Because it's based on what they call median incomes, that word median again. So basically, not the high, not the low, but the middle, okay? So in some cases, you can't exceed 80% of the area's median income, or you can't exceed 100. And sometimes it can't, it's 120% if it's like a high dollar area like a D.C. or New York, okay? So now, with that being the case, all you have to do is go to the state board who manages that and find out where the funds are at, or your city. You can check with your city. Typically, if you're in a very urban center like a Baltimore, D.C., New York, Chicago, Detroit, typically those places are always going to have a lot of money. That's just the way it is. They make sure that the funds are available to promote home ownership, okay? So definitely check into those. Now, in addition to that, there's what's called IDAs, Individual Development Accounts. United Way, for instance, is one of them. They actually have a program where they do up to a 5-to-1 match, meaning that they'll say, for instance, over a certain period of time, will put money in an account with you. It's like a 401k on steroids. Basically, if you get a 5-to-1 match, that's 500%. Rate of return.
Wow.
Meaning that you put in $100, they might give you back $500. So your $100 turns into $600. I have a friend who did that. She got, I think, a total of like $5,500 from the United Way in Atlanta. Okay. So that's just another
thing. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Some of that stuff. There's a website. It's called CFED.org, CFED.org. Now, that website, they usually have all the information on individual development accounts. And an individual development account basically can be used for home ownership, business generation, as well as, business genesis, trying to start a new business, as well as for educational purposes. And so this is something that you can get started, and they look at your income and stuff like that. And, you have to meet all those income requirements because they don't want someone who's filthy rich, taking part in this. But, it's another form of free money, okay? So with that being said, those are some ways to get down payment. And then let's say, for instance, you want to buy a home from a family member, okay?
Okay.
FHA and conventional loans, this can happen on either one of these transactions. But let's say, for instance, you have a family member that has a house that's worth about $400,000. It's like a grandmother who, they're filthy rich, they're loaded, you know, but they just want to keep the house in their family. They don't want to just give it to you, but they want to give it to you at a price below market value. You have what's called a gift of equity transaction. Are you ready for this? And this is something that white people do, okay? Because I do these loans all the time. You can actually be gifted equity to pay for your down payment and all your closing costs, effectively have 100% financing without getting 100% finance pricing. So, for
instance... Okay, wait a minute. How is that possible?
It's because it's a phantom transaction. It's all on paper. So, let's say, for instance, let's make it a conventional, because it doesn't matter if it's FHA conventional, because if you have a lot of equity and you got a good credit score, I would just tell people to go conventional. So, the way conventional guidelines works, it bases off everything off of your purchase price, right? And that's all loans, because the purchase price is what is going to be considered the market value for the transaction. So let's say, for instance, the house that's worth $400,000. We know that it's worth $400,000 without a shadow of a doubt. That's like the worst case. And your grandmother wants to sell it to you for $200,000. So I want to walk away $200,000. All it takes is a little bit of math. So we figure out what the closing costs are going to be. We figure out, you know, what the expenses for, say, the taxes and insurance are going to be. If there's any money, for instance, they know there's going to be some repairs that are necessary. That's going to cut into the money, right?
Right.
We can even account for that. So we just do a little bit of math. We say we know they want to walk away with about $200,000. We got all these things they need accounted for. Let's say, for instance, we make the purchase price $280,000. Okay, just using that as a rough number, and 20% down on that would be what, $56,000, right? On $280,000. So that gives you a mortgage of $224,000. Now, out of that $224,000, right, you can, on a loan like that, you can get up to 6% of your closing costs paid on a conventional loan, right, which means it can cover your closing costs from the attorney, right? It can cover your taxes and insurance if you have an escrow account to pay your taxes and insurance on a monthly basis. And if there's, you know, some money left over, you know, like I said, it can cover, you know, any repairs that we need, right? And what will happen is you write the contract and you structure the contract in such a way where the money is going to be gifted, and it's just a matter of a gift letter. It's a simple gift letter saying, out of love, blah, 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 we gift XYZ equity to our grandson. And voila, you now have a 20% down payment. You have closing costs paid for, and you may not have to come out of your pocket with a dime. This is a way for black people to pass on their wealth.
Wow, that is great.
So it happens all the time. So it can be done on a conventional or FHA loan, right? Or a VA loan for that matter, okay? But, yeah, it's done all the time. So now we talked about FHA. We talked about conventional. VA loans for people with military veterans, spouses of deceased military people, or say, for instance, children of certain vets. At one point they used to do that, but I think pretty much right now you have to be active duty military or reservist or served at some point in time. Your VA eligibility, they usually have to go back and check your military records, make sure you're, you know, given an honorable discharge at least, or just a discharge, and then they'll... VA is similar to FHA in some ways, but the difference is VA has 100% financing and there's no private mortgage insurance monthly. But the one thing that VA does have is what's called a funding fee. And basically, it's about 2.25% of the loan amount. So if it's a $100,000 loan, it's like $2,250 tacked onto your loan. You can get someone to pay for that as part of your closing costs on a transaction. That happens pretty much all the time. VA loans, they're a lot more credit friendly because it's basically guaranteed by the Department of Veterans Affairs. So they're a little bit more credit friendly than even the FHA. There's technically no minimum credit score requirement for those either. So your find only, like I said, people who are involved with the military, and that's all other armed forces, you know, Navy, Marines, Army, Air Force, and Coast Guard will be VA eligible typically. Okay. Now, I talked about all these loan types, right?
Right.
The one that you really need to know about, there's one more. Okay. There's USDA for people who live in rural areas. They actually have some really good programs. They have some subsidies. Sometimes they give below market interest rates, and that's 100% financing. And it also has a funding fee of about 2%. So, you know, for people who live out in the country, they don't have help for you. And in certain states, you know, they'll actually do, like, sometimes, you know, like I said, below market rate loans where, you know, the rates are averaging about, you know, 1 or 2 points below whatever the current market rates are. So those are great loans, too. But the best loan out there, right, and I don't have any affiliation with this company, this organization, but I have seen the results over and over again, is NACA, okay? If you do not know about NACA, you need to find out about them. NACA is a not-for-profit. Basically, what they've done is they lobbied with all of the major lending institutions and got them to give concessions. And basically, they offer people who are low to moderate income the opportunity to buy a home with no closing costs from the lender, being NACA, and basically get a rate that's going to be at least a half to 1 point below whatever the market rate is. So if the normal rates are going at, you know, 4.5, NACA is going to be at 4, maybe 3.875% to start with. Okay. Now,
wow.
With that being the case, NACA is 100% financing. There's no gimmicks. There's no mortgage insurance loan with it. Okay. Now, what they do have is they have a general fund that they collect about $50 a month for the first 5 years you have the loan with them, and they require a community service from you. Okay. Small price to pay for a program that you can't get anywhere else. Okay.
That's right.
Now, the thing with NACA, if you go there, tore up from the floor, you are going to have problems because they are understaffed and they have basically the best product out on the market in a high demand and very few people to help service it, okay? So with that being the case, you are to your best interest to make sure when you go in there, your stuff is right. Because if you're not, they will put you through fire hoops. I mean, they will have you juggling, you know, cans on your forehead to get that loan. But it is the best program out there. And my own sister went through it. And she went through the program. She got a 0.875% interest rate. You heard me, 0.875, the 30-year fixed. And how did she do this? Well,
that's unheard of.
Yeah, here's how she did it, okay? Now, NACA, being that they're a not-for-profit, their whole thing is they feel like banks basically don't give people their money's worth, which I would agree with that in a lot of cases. Now, the difference between NACA and how a bank works, when you go to a bank and you get a loan, and say, for instance, they have all these charges and junk fees and points and all that stuff, NACA doesn't have any closing costs, right? I think there's like one thing they charge for, it's like $15 or $20, very inexpensive. But everything else, like if you want to buy your rate down by paying points, points are prepaid interest, like I said. And what the bank does is says, okay, each point you pay is equal to 1% of the loan amount. And that 1% of the loan amount, basically, if you pay the points, may give you back anywhere from a quarter of a point in rate to 3/8, sometimes a half point in rate. And the philosophy is that over time, if you pay the points, over the life of the loan, you'll save money. Now, the only problem with that is it depends on when you do it. Because if you do it like when you first buy the house and someone's helping you pay the points, absolutely do it. But if you have to incorporate it into a loan, like say, for instance, on a refinance, which that's not what this is about today, but it doesn't make as much sense. Now, what NACA says is this, okay, we're going to make it an even exchange. 1 point is equal to $1,000. Because basically they've seen that as an obscene profit that the banks are making off that, right? Because the statistics show that, you know, for instance, the average person refinances every 5 years or something like that. Or the average loan has a 7-year life cycle. So with that being the case, NACA says for every point that you pay is equal to $1,000. And for every point, it's equal to 0.25% reduction in your rate. So if the rates stay, for instance, in the case of my sister started at 4.875 when she went to go do it, she paid 16 points on her loan. Now, had she went to a mortgage company, right, she would have been paying 16% of the purchase price in points, which is absurd, right?
Wow, yes.
Now, what NACA says, okay, you're going to pay $16,000. Now, depending upon the size of the loan, if it's a smaller loan, then it doesn't look too good. But even still, you're going to get such a low rate, it doesn't matter because you're saving money on the life of the loan. Now, with that being the case, she pays $16,000 in points. But here's the trick. She got $7,500 in down payment assistance from the city of Charlotte. She got $3,500 from the seller. So she already had $11,000. So now she had already put $1,500 in earnest money, right, towards her contract. So really at closing, she only had to come up with an additional, what is that, extra like $3,500. Plus she still had other stuff from the attorney and stuff like that. And I think the seller paid even the attorney's costs separate from the other closing costs. So at the end of the day, she actually pimped the system because here's how she did it. On top of all the money she got from the city of Charlotte and from the seller, she actually got the first-time homebuyer tax credit. Okay, so that first-time homebuyer tax credit program she took advantage of was $8,000. So she got that, and on top of that, the points that she paid at the time of closing, actually, she's going to get a chance to write that off next year because she bought the points at time of purchase. So, therefore, she's going to actually get a reduction of $4,000 off her income.
Wow.
Even though someone else has paid for most of it. So, when it was all said and done, she brought her rate down by paying $16,000, which is basically buying the rate down by 4 percentage points. So our total payment with everything, including principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, is $506 a month. And that's only because the taxes are sky high, because the house is really worth $145. So she's paying taxes on a house worth $145, and then she bought it for $93.
Oh, my goodness. That is completely unheard of. And I am just without words. That she was able to get, that is like a steal beyond a great deal. That's a complete steal.
Absolutely. And those things are happening right now. So, NACA, you have to get involved. I hate to tell people this, but for those who are looking for reparations, you ain't going to get it. This is the closest thing you're going to get to reparations. You ain't going to see that anytime in my lifetime. I mean, it ain't going to happen, so. If you want something that's, you know, pretty close to it, this is it. I mean, I'm just telling people that.
Well, it definitely sounds like it.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's designed for people with low to moderate income. Now, here's the thing with NACA. Once again, there's no income limit. You can make as much money, but they just tell you your loan amount or your purchase price is limited. And with their whole process behind that is they don't want the rich getting richer, basically. It's kind of what it is. If you got good credit, you can go there. They don't just work people who have, you know, okay credit. They work people with excellent credit. That's fine. If anything, it's going to make your process easier because there won't be as many questions, okay? But it is the best program. I'm telling you as an industry insider, if you are a first, even if you're not a first-time buyer, because even with NACA, as long as you haven't owned a property for a year with NACA, you can still deal with them as long as you don't have any other mortgages on your credit, okay?
Wow, that's great. That is some really great information that you gave us tonight. I'm going to have to ask you to definitely come back, one, so that you can finish telling us about the different types of mortgages and programs that are out there. But definitely we need to, next time I have you come and talk to us about the loan modification, because I know a lot of people who are trying to refinance or trying to modify their loan so that they don't go into foreclosure. That's some really great information, but you have given us such a plethora of great information tonight. I definitely, but definitely would like to have you back. Could you please give us those websites once again? I think you said something about if you want to get your real credit score.
MyFICO.com.
So that's MyFICO?
MyFICO.
MyFICO.com.
Yeah.
And that will give you the same scoring that the mortgage companies are looking at. Okay. Then I think you gave us another website. I think it's CFED.org.
Yes, that's where you can find information on individual development accounts in your area.
Okay. And then I think the last one you said was NACA. Now, how can they find out information about that?
Go to NACA.com, NACA.com.
NACA.com. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining me and those of you all who will be listening to this as a rebroadcast. You can get more information from my website as well as Blog Talk Radio on the show page. And please join me next week. Hopefully we'll be able to have you back on so that you can finish telling us some great information. If not, I definitely would like to have you come back at a different, at another date, so that you can finish telling us about these great hot tips, programs that are out there that most people don't know about and should know about. And next time, I would like to ask you, when is the best time to buy? You mentioned that this was that, especially with NACA, because it's a non-for-profit. Fiscal year just started for them, so they're kind of, most of the programs do have money now. So is the fall season the best time, or what is the best time? I know this is a buyer's market all over, but when is the actual best time?
Usually, you know, winter time is usually pretty good because if people are trying to get rid of inventory, so like for new home purchases, wintertime is like the best because they'll slash prices. They have special incentives. That's one of the best times because the prices are somewhat depressed because the peak season is the summertime, spring and summer. So in wintertime, it's just like most things, you get better pricing. Only reason pricing is not the best on everything, like on certain consumer goods, because of Christmas and there's demand. So at the end of the year, there's not as much demand for new homes. So therefore, you can negotiate. You can do some hardball negotiating and get some really good prices.
Well, thank you for that tip, and I would like to ask you to come back and join us again. And for those of you who are listening, we'll be listening this in archives. Don't forget to tune in next week. We'll have some more great tips to share with you all. And thank you for listening to Secure Your Life. Join us next week, same time, 10 o'clock Central, 11 Eastern. And thanks again, and thanks so much for joining me. Until next week, be blessed.
Good night.
Good night.